So we're going to start our quick hit session here. And our first speaker is Gordon Smith, who's one of the attorneys that works with the Maine Medical Association and helps us keep up to date with our legislative that's coming through the Maine legislation, but is going to talk to us about HIPAA and FERPA.
Thank you. Good morning. I know many of you, there's not a one of you that knows me that thinks I can possibly do this in 15 minutes. But to put that in perspective, a week ago at Quality Counts, I had 2 minutes, and I had to share that time with my president, Dr. Schlager. So this is actually generous. I've been given no instructions on these slides, so let's see if that works. Okay. So you've got some awesome speakers during this quick hits part, and I know all of them well. One of them works for me, Mr. Cousins back there. So I do not want to start this out by getting this schedule behind. So I am going to absolutely stick to the drill, which was 10 minutes and then 5 minutes for questions. You can barely start on HIPAA and FERPA in that time. So I'm going to tell you the conclusions first, and then we're going to look at some of the 30 slides. But we're going to start on slide 23, because I'm assuming, knowing many of you, that you know quite a bit about HIPAA, and you may or may not know much about FERPA, which is the Family Educational Rights and Privacy Act. Do we have any like school nurses here, people that really work in a school-based clinic? So you know all about FERPA, right? What this very quick hit is about, really, is the intersection of FERPA and HIPAA. And the conclusion is that they affect different types of records, and they come from different places. One comes from the U.S. Department of Education. One comes from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. But we're not the first people on Earth to think about the intersection of these two laws. And in fact, in 2008, the two departments, to their credit, gave some joint guidance about how these two laws intersect to assist people like yourselves who have to occasionally call a school and share information with a school, or those of you who are working in a school setting and have to call another healthcare provider who's governed by HIPAA. So there's two sets of rules. They're quite similar. They're quite, they complement each other. But we're not going to get to the depth of it in my remaining 8 minutes. The conclusion is as follows, that the things that are at the school are considered school or education records. FERPA is broader than just healthcare. That includes their test scores, anything, but health records that are held at the school are a part of those. They're considered educational records, but they're a part of they're governed by FERPA. And obviously on the HIPAA side, we're only talking about health records and medical records. Both are trying to figure out how to protect the individual identity of the student or the patient. There is more opportunity as a healthcare provider. You have more opportunity to share the record without the consent of the parents than on the FERPA side. The FERPA is really more protective of the student and parents' interests. And then before starting on slide 23, let me just say that it's interesting. We've done HIPAA education HIPAA's been around since 1996, so what, we've got 22 years of experience. I'm not sure when FERPA was enacted, but obviously it was around in 2008 when they did the joint guidance. But we really didn't start including FERPA in our presentations around the state on our HIPAA staff training until about 2 or 3 years ago. And I think the reason that it finally came to the forefront was that there's just a lot more now that we're doing for students regarding health And the only place we may find them is in school. And so there's a lot more need for going back and forth. And frankly, it's also true that unfortunately, because of the horrific situations with schools nowadays and safety, somewhat related to guns, it's even more critical that we get it right in terms of what information can be shared between healthcare team and the school team. So my last point is really, we have three lawyers at the office. Many of you know us and call us, but we're always available. It doesn't matter whether you're a PA, a nurse, a staff assistant, an MA, a physician. We never turn anybody down. We try to help you. And it's, again, we're not going to be able today in my remaining 6 minutes to tell you everything you need to know about these two laws. So don't hesitate to call us. And it's complicated because of the rights of the parents, of course. Anything that we know, even our lecture on minors' rights to health care and all those things that minors can self-consent to and how you deal with all of that, that's an hour. And even then, we feel like we're just kind of skimming the surface. So we got three lawyers there. It'd be very unusual to call one of us and not have an opportunity to get an answer. Peter Michaud, our third lawyer, is also a nurse, and that's helpful because he's got a clinical background as well. So I think I will get to the slides, but I'll take Dr. Meister's question first, and let me comment that I really have appreciated tremendously Steve co-chairing our legislative committee this year, and he's been so, he and I share a real passion right now about medical marijuana. Let me rephrase that. We share a real concern about what the legislature is about to do on medical marijuana and the impact and that how that might impact on kids. We've kind of lost the battle with the 186 legislators, but we're not going to give it up because the health of our children is too important. And so there's not a day goes by. Before I even left Winthrop, my home, which is about maybe 2 miles from Steve and Dervila's home, I had two significant emails from him, one on guns and one on marijuana. And he's just done a tremendous job for you and us in chairing our committee. So now you can ask your question. So
the question, it really is, I want you to think about this, especially in relation to attention deficit disorder and sharing of information, because we all use these forms, these Vanderbilt forms. We send them to the school, we ask the teachers to fill them out, we need consent, and we're now...
Need whose consent?
We need the parents' consent to be able to send them and share the information. But now, you know, we don't always get them back, and one strategy is to work the school nurses into this picture, and that changes things a little bit, and I think one of the questions that I have is, what do we have to do to make sure that we're able to get all of this information? Because it's mental health, it's educational, you know, functioning, and yes. It's about medication.
Yes. If you want to get it back from that school nurse, the school nurse is more limited in being able to share that with you than you are able to share it with them. Because under HIPAA, as you know, if it's anything for treatment, payment, health plan operations, you don't need consent of anybody to share information with people that are part of that team. So you can consider the nurse in the school health clinic to be part of that team. You can share whatever you want with them. They are more limited in what they can share back with you, and frequently will need the parent's permission. There is an exception, and I believe that this exception will grow for bona fide emergencies. So that's good to know that they have that ability. But otherwise, the only way to assure you're going to get that Vanderbilt form back is to make sure that they've got permission from a parent to be able to share that back with you. So I've got only about 5 slides. I think I can finish this up in a couple minutes and take a question or two. As I say, the FERPA is the Federal Educational Rights and Privacy Act. It applies to public elementary, secondary, post-secondary schools. One of the talks I gave, though, was up at Husson College to the Health Center. Husson is not a public, I mean, it's a private institution, it's not a public university. So I'm assuming that perhaps public in this context means if you may be affected at Bates, Bowdoin, or Colby by FERPA because you take federal money and have federal loan money and things. So I just assume that it applies to virtually everybody in the educational realm. Parents do have some rights to access their children's educational records, and they have some control over disclosure of personally identifiable information. Those are the kind of questions, though, because the parents don't have right to those in healthcare to those things that you may be treating them for confidentially that state law has absolutely encouraged them to come in and see you for. Drugs, sex, those kinds of things. Mental health, counseling. So I think in that case, it may be where if you've got FERPA saying the parents have the right to this information, and we got state law on the healthcare side saying they don't, that's a good question for you to call us with and say, in this particular context, thank you, in this particular context, which law applies? Question. Sure.
The parents' access and right to amend children's education records. I thought they weren't allowed to access college records, and that's post-secondary school.
Yes. Yeah.
I thought they weren't allowed to do that.
Parents? I don't know the answer to that question.
Students, students sign the FERPA that say that their parents can have access.
Otherwise, they can't. So the parent,
You're advising a student, you're looking at their academic stuff, and they have to sign FERPA.
Well, I'm glad you asked the question because it in fact puts another layer on it that college students, if they're 18, are adults. So some of them, I guess I was barely 18 when I started at the University of Maine, but again, you've got some students at the universities that may be 17. So you've got that level, that layer too. And I've always been fascinated in our talk that we give on minors' rights that any of us as parents, if we were thinking, when our child was 17, is about to reach their 18th birthday, we would ask for a copy of their medical record when we still had control of it. Because as soon as they turn 18, we got no control of that record whatsoever, even though the day before we had complete access to it almost, unless it was one of those confidential conditions. But that's a great question. Let me just go through these other slides. They're quite simple, actually. Again, we're talking with records directly related to the student maintained by the school or its agent, kept in any way, including an email, that personally identifies the patient that's very similar, the student that's very similar to our standard in HIPAA. And again, I mentioned earlier, it covers more than just school, more than health records. It's transcripts, course schedules, and the like. They're not considered educational records. If there are some things like if you're a nurse or a teacher and you are taking personal notes or a telephone call or something, not every single thing that happens is going to be considered a FERPA-related record. Whereas in healthcare, we honestly don't have almost anything that comes in is part of that health record. Also doesn't include law enforcement records. So under FERPA, you have to keep specific detailed records of all the requests for that student's information. But there are exceptions, fortunately. If the parent asks for it, if the person with the parent's permission asks for it, if school officials need it for a legitimate educational interest and the kid transfers to a new school, those are not situations where you have to keep track of that specific request. You can disclose records without consent if there's a health or safety emergency, actual, impending, or imminent. It has to be articulable, if that's a word, and significant threat. Subpoenas and court orders are allowed by state law to juvenile justice. And you have to have a reasonable opportunity to notify the parent. There's other several limited exceptions for audits, accreditation standards, et cetera. Directory information, that just is whether the kid is a student in that school. You have to notify parents of their rights. You have to do some staff training on FERPA. Interestingly, under FERPA, as opposed to HIPAA, you don't have to tell the parent or the kid if their record's been breached. We don't have time today to discuss the pros and cons of that. It took 10 years in the HIPAA before we had to notify patients of a breach. So I'm not in a position to criticize what the federal government's requiring or not requiring on that situation. And then there are some opportunities to waive rights. So I think that's the last slide. I'll take, maybe one question. We're really out of time. I don't want to hold Deb back or anybody. And again, I'll take maybe one question. Yeah.
Sure. In terms of the school nurse being a part of the healthcare team.
Yes. Yes.
So I can disclose information.
Absolutely.
To her. Can she respond to my questions and provide?
Probably not. Probably not. That's a perfect last, closing on this talk is that, again, you as healthcare providers have more opportunity to share with them, and they're probably they may well need parents' permission in order to answer your question and respond back to you, unless it's a bona fide emergency. Question, comment? Sure. Right, so the answer from people that actually know something about school health is that they have a form that's already for the parent's signature. Do the parents do they have an opportunity early in the school year? I understand in some school health clinics, for instance, the parent has to sign for the kid to have access to the school health clinic. Do they know? Nowhere is that the case. So do they have an opportunity to sign a blanket release that says anytime during the year? So I've got some heads say no, some say yes.
It's the same form that allows me to pay for my college.
Right. Okay.
Same package
of information often. Okay. So I'm not sure whether parents have the right to, we don't allow, that broad a release under HIPAA, so it may not be permissible under FERPA. I should say, too, that the records, there are some HIPAA applicability for transactions and things if the school health clinic is billing Medicaid or billing the insurance company. Then there are some aspects where you're treated more like a healthcare provider under HIPAA. I can only take one more question because my time is up. Yes.
Just curious about the situation when a high school student has missed too many days of school. Often school wants a note from the doctor about verifying the illness for the missed days. And I recently had a situation where the parent wanted the records in order to give the school that information. Of course, the records were full of things about substance abuse and mental illness. So I said, no, don't give those records. But it was an interesting situation thinking about this, that the parent was an intermediary, which I usually think is good. But in this case,
here's how I would handle that situation. You can't respond to the school's need for that information to substantiate why the child was out without the parent's permission. So the parent absolutely has the right to sign off on that and could refuse you from giving that information. If they ask for your health record, they, as a parent, have the right to that, but not to the things that the child can self-consent to. So you would have to redact that record and only include that little piece that relates to why they were out, unless, of course, why they were out related to something that they could confidentially self-consent to. It's complicated. But that's a great question. I'm going to get off. I want to thank you for your advocacy. Again, you're an awesome organization.